Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Game 3 of the NBA Finals fall will take place in Florida tomorrow night. On one side is the Denver Nuggets, who knocked out LeBron James's LA Lakers to get to this final round of games. And on the other side is James's former team, the Miami Heat. James himself, of course, won't be playing in any of the final games. So if you're looking for a LeBron fix for the rest of the season, you could go off-Broadway to see the play King James. LeBron is not the subject. Exactly. It's about two men whose friendship revolves around their strong feelings about James, feelings of pride, abandonment, sacrifice. LeBron James' career provides the framing for the four-scene play, beginning with his first season with the Cleveland Cavaliers in 2003-2004, through his move to the Heat and his return to win the 2016 Finals for Cleveland. The show runs through June 18th, which also happens to be the scheduled date of the deciding Game 7 of the NBA Finals, if neither team is knocked out before then. Joining us now are playwright Rajiv Joseph. Hi, Rajiv.
Hi.
And actors Chris Perfetti, yes, of Abbott Elementary fame. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Alison.
And Glenn Davis, most recently on New York Stage and Downstate, and artistic director of Steppenwolf Theater, where the play actually originated. Nice to see you.
Good to see you. Thank you.
So, Rajiv, when did you start to think about LeBron's career, how it could be a framing for a play?
Well, I'm from Cleveland, and I'm a big sports fan, and I have always been interested in the way that sports intersects with our daily lives and the way that we create friendships through it. And when LeBron had come back to Cleveland and won a championship and was having this wonderful run, it was probably the kind of apex of his career in those years. I started to realize, oh, he's probably either going to leave Cleveland or he's going to retire someday. And at that point, he had been in my life for, you know, about 15, 16 years. Now it's been 20 years that he's been playing. And when you have that sort of passage of time, you kind of look back on your own life and realize, when's the last time he wasn't part of my sporting life, you know? And something about that passage of time and what he has meant to the city of Cleveland and to me personally made me want to write this play.
I like that you said, in your life.
Yeah.
Like, that's part of the thing. It's in these two men's life.
Right.
LeBron means something. What does LeBron mean to your character, Chris?
He means everything. It's amazing, the way that Matt talks about this person that he's never met and has, you know, so little in common with. I feel like it was actually right before we started rehearsing the play when I went to a game with Rajiv in Cleveland that it kind of like the play sunk a little bit deeper for me. And I was like, oh, this is actually what Matt is describing, because I was there at a game watching somebody who's a super fan kind of experience just something on another level. So, yeah, I mean, he means everything to him.
What does it mean to your character? What does it mean to Sean?
Yeah, I think he's... he represents a sort of godlike figure in the play. He calls him a deity. he's someone who he looks at and it forces him to look at his own life and the choices that he's making and the aspirations that he has in terms of what he wants to do with his career. So he's an idol of sorts, but like a godlike figure.
Rajiv, these Matt and Sean first meet when Sean comes to buy Matt's tickets. Matt's got the season tickets, trying to sell them for a lot of money. What was interesting about that way for the friendship to begin? Because it first starts out as a transactional relationship. That's the first interaction, and then it starts to grow.
Yeah, well, when I first wrote the first draft of the play, and I tend to write lots of drafts of plays and try to figure out sort of the structure and the story as I go along. The first draft of the play was only one scene, and it would have been sort of expansion of what would be the last scene, where these guys had known each other for years and we're getting the backstory through them. And that didn't really work for me. And then I had this idea that, you know, perhaps we could structure the play like a game. And so there would be four scenes, like four quarters of a game with a halftime intermission. And then I thought about, okay, so what are those four moments in time that I would want to illuminate during LeBron's career and how we would track their friendship through it? So you have this first scene where these two guys are going to be in a room together and they don't really know each other. So what keeps them there? You know, that's the sort of dramatic question of any scene, is like, why doesn't one of the characters just get up and leave? And so they both have to want something. And so in Chris's, or in Matt's case, he needs money and he's trying to sell these season tickets and he doesn't want to because LeBron's here. He's a rookie, and and in Sean's case, he has this dream of getting good tickets and going to a game, and he hasn't had, you know, financial resources his entire life until this moment, and he's really trying to get these tickets so he can go to start watching these games. And so this transaction brings them together.
What's going on in Matt's life when we meet him?
I think we sort of find him really sort of desperate for somebody to walk in that door and change his life. I feel like plays, when they are great, are sort of about the worst and best days of people's lives. Mm-hmm. And I think it's safe to say that Matt is not having a great time of it at the top of the play. He's a bit of a loner. He kind of marches to the beat of his own drum. And I think the introduction to Sean really changes his life for many reasons. But, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's really important to Sean that Matt know he's not a bandwagon fan. That he is a diehard, that he has been there from the beginning. Why is that so important to your character? Well, that he's authentic, that he's real.
Yeah, like in sports sort of lore, in the sort of cosmology of classic American sports, the absolute worst thing you can be is a bandwagon fan. It's me and Rajiv have talked about this over time, like, your sports team is sort of a matter of circumstance, right? It's like your religion. Mm-hmm. You're born into it. But I think we were doing research on the play. One thing that we came across was people more often change their religions than they do their sports affiliations, right?
So
I think that for him, you know, when he's called a bandwagon fan, it's like, no, those people are scum. No, I'm someone who was born into this and I'm going to die, you know, a Cleveland Cavaliers fan. That's just what it is. So I think when you meet him, he's sort of a lonely figure as well. I think that's one of the things that brings these two guys together, is that they don't really have any outside world outside of their sort of sports affiliation with the Cleveland teams. And specifically because Cleveland had not won a championship in so many years, it was like, you know, I'm from Chicago, it's like the Chicago Cubs. It's like we were called the lovable losers for so long. That was a thing that sort of
Yankees people.
Okay, so, there was like, if you see someone if I'm in Minnesota and I see someone with a Chicago Cubs hat, I just look at them like, you know what it is.
Yeah.
We're diehards. Our team never wins, but we keep this hat on because that's where we're from. That's what we do.
And then you immediately feel bonded to that person.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's this interesting sub story, Rajiv, of that Sean becomes close to Matt's mother. Mm-hmm. What does that reveal about these two characters of Matt and Sean, that Sean gets closer to Matt's mother than Matt seems to be?
Well, I think that, you know, it's one of those, it's a peculiarity of Sean. And I think that we've all had maybe friends of ours who, you know, can charm our parents, you know, in a way that it can be kind of annoying. It's like the kid who kind of just like sidles up in the kitchen and starts talking to Mrs. Whoever, and she just thinks he's adorable and thinks he's just, you know, that he is the bee's knees. And meanwhile, Matt's sitting there being like, dude, first of all, you're not that great, and my mom's not that nice either, and he doesn't have that sort of relationship with his parents. And so it's a comedic effect, but it also shows a sort of it shows the way that Glenn's character Sean is able to kind of to find friendships in places where Matt actually isn't. And I think that one of the character traits of Matt is that he's not someone who makes friends easily, even with his own family. And it's a source of irritation for him as the play goes on that Sean continues to have an independent relationship with his mother.
We're talking about the play King James at New York City Center through June 18th. My guests are playwright Rajiv Joseph and actors Chris Perfetti and Glenn Davis. So there's also this subtext of abandonment in the play. Because Sean is maybe going to leave because he's got this idea that he wants to be a writer, and will he be abandoning Matt? And obviously this is mirroring LeBron leaving and going to the Miami Heat. When you think about it, Chris, why can't Matt just say, like, dude, you left me. Like, I'm hurt by this. Mm-hmm. I'm really hurt by this.
Yeah, I don't know how I sort of want that for him, but yeah. I think that your point sort of underscores, you know, the deeper investigation of the play is that there's really only one sort of moment in the play, and it's very late in the play when somebody overtly talks about their feelings or is able to articulate mm-hmm. in a way that is vulnerable and generous. And I think what's so juicy as an actor to play in this piece is how much people are not saying what they mean and maybe saying something that they definitely don't mean or something you know, completely unrelated and it's that disconnect and sort of the ways in which we connect through things that, you know, that maybe are sports or like have mm-hmm. nothing to do with our immediate lives. And so I think it's dramatically just way more fun to watch people trying to connect and fail than being incredibly articulate and good at it.
Why do you think your character just can't say, you know, Matt, you're hurting my feelings?
I think he's right. At least for an actor, it's more interesting to have subtext in many projects you're working on because it allows you to feel so much and express things mm-hmm. and show rather than tell. And you know, if you ever watch a movie and you see the bad guy and then the bad guy has all these plans that you don't know about, and then towards the end, the bad guy starts telling the good guy what their plans are. And you're like, dude, why did you? right? Like, you had us. Like, I was on the edge of my seat. So I think mm-hmm. that's sort of in terms of narrative, and Rajiv can speak to that. But like, you keep the audience sort of on their heels, like as they're sort of leaning in to see what are these guys feeling? What are they mm-hmm. trying to say, but they can't? And also, you're rooting for them. Like, can you just give them a little more? Give them a, you know, so. And lastly, I'll just say it's, I call it a sort of meditation on male friendship, classic North mm-hmm. American male friendship. And that, you know, I've had this relationship with my dad, with some of my friends growing up, in which I'll be feeling all these things and I don't know how to express these ideas, these notions, these emotions. But then, as Rajiv so eloquently put it, I would then talk about who's the greatest of all time, and I can tell you exactly with specificity and give you dates and times and mm-hmm. where I was and why, you know, this player is better than that player. So I think that's a sort of function of the play, is that you're watching these two men who can't express themselves with sort of everyday, their everyday emotional life, but then when it comes to something that they feel passionate about, like mm-hmm. LeBron or Jordan or sports, they can take a deep dive.
Rajiv, how much of your own emotion did you tap into when LeBron decided to take his talents to South Beach, as he put it?
A lot. I mean, when that happened, when the decision happened, I was really upset. I was angry, mm-hmm. along with a lot of people in Cleveland. And, you know, it was a really interesting time because, you know, not only was LeBron the biggest superstar that any Cleveland team had in my lifetime, but he was also, you know, a hometown kid. You know, he had grown up in Akron, Northeast mm-hmm. Ohio, and so we felt kind of doubly betrayed by that. And I spent the next couple of years, you know, really rooting furiously against him as he was in Miami. In fact, Glenn and I went to a very famous regular season game in Chicago where Miami was on the Miami and LeBron had this long winning streak going, and they came into Chicago and the Bulls snapped that winning streak, and yeah. Glenn and I were at that game together rooting furiously for the Bulls.
It was like 20, it was like a 20 some odd game streak.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, a big Chicago Bulls fan, and Rajiv, a big Cleveland Cavaliers fan, both of us for different reasons rooting against
that's
LeBron.
Right, that's right, yeah. But then it was glorious when he came back.
Yeah.
We see these characters over 2004, 2016, so over 12 years. How does your character mature? How does Matt mature? He has an interesting road because he becomes kind of a jerk at one point. He's sort of, you know, Sean's a little bit down on his luck and Matt's not sensitive to it. Mm. But by the end, they sort of, I don't give anything, they find each other again in a certain way. They find an equilibrium. Talk to me a little bit about Matt's journey, his emotional journey, his towards maturity.
It's a roller coaster for sure. I think what's so fun about the play is you really get to see every aspect of a friendship, and you really get to see both of them at their highs and their lows. And I think there's there's certain things about Matt's personality that he's shed a little bit by the time we reach that fourth quarter. But what I think is equally interesting about the play, I think, is the ways in which he hasn't changed. You know, he's he's gotten older, but he's hardened in a way. And he's given some things up. He's certainly less of an expert, I feel like, by the end of the play. But I think one of the beautiful things that the play explores is how, like, blessed are the people that can find friends who will put up with their flaws. Mm-hmm. You know,
the time jumps are also kind of hilarious. You use the cell phone quite a bit as a signifier, and people laughed out loud when you came back from LA wearing a pork pie hat. my particular audience, there was this laugh. How did you think about the time jump so that you could keep the story being continuous, but clearly moving it along?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, that's part of the, you know, appeal of, like, you know, or the, I guess, the amazement I have in how long LeBron's been in the league. You know, he comes into the league. When he comes into the league, there's no social media. You know, there's no smartphones. There's no things like Uber. It was such a different time that almost seems antiquated, and yet actually wasn't that long ago. And I think, you know, in the last 20 years, technology has really been, you know, what has changed so enormously. And so, like, that we can use those details to help us tell the story of time passing. And and cell phones sort of, you know, they figure into every scene, you know, in some way, shape, or form, whether it's a text message that one person gets, or whether it's the barrage of text messages they both receive in scene three when their friends start to tell them, guess what, LeBron's coming home. And and that's how definitely it was for me. I remember I was on the F train going above ground, because back then there was no service on the subway at all unless you went above ground. I was going back into Park Slope, and suddenly my phone just blew up, and I'm looking on the phone, and I start jumping around the subway. People thought I was crazy. I was like, LeBron's coming home.
I think that's an interesting point. Like, when Michael Jordan retired, he held like a press conference, right, to announce his retirement, right? And then when he came back, he released a fax saying, "I'm back," which was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. If this was today, he would have had a social, like LeBron, like Instagram, a letter, you know. So just you're right, just in terms of, I never even thought about it, the passage of time, how we deal with major events like that with athletes.
What would you say to somebody who's not a sports fan who wants to come see this show?
Well, my one of my prime objectives was to write a play that could be appealing to non-sports fans, because the play isn't really about sports. Sports are just the lens through which we watch the story of two friends, and the passage of time. And so I've talked to a lot of people, and you know, it's not my first time writing about sports. I co-wrote a movie called Draft Day, which is about the NFL draft, which is one of the more boring sporting events of the entire year. But we were able to kind of create an interesting story through that. And I think, you know, sports is, you know, a pervasive part of our culture, but in this play, at least, it is just it's a detail of the culture that these guys are engaged in, and it's not really about basketball at all.
The name of the play is King James. It's at New York City Center through June 18th. I've been speaking with playwright Rajiv Joseph, and actors Chris Perfetti and Glenn Davis. Thanks for making time.
Thank you, Allison.
And that's all of it for today. I'm Allison Stewart. I appreciate you listening. I appreciate you, and I'll meet you back here next time.